welcome to the first post-match Forever Bristol City podcast of the 21-22 season. I say the 21-22 season starts hatching today, as you saw that little graphic I put on Twitter. Joining me is the inimitable trio of Dave Fevs, Mark, a.k.a. Greenan, and Ian. And we've all tried and just about succeeded in watching the match played at the training ground. I'm going to call it the training ground, where it finished Bristol City 0, champions not of the Scottish Premier League, Celtic 0. Guys, let's sort of not do our usual recap because it was too much going on, but maybe let's do a quick recap. I'll come to you first, Dave. Early thoughts, just a quick, I'm not going to do piece by piece, but just a quick summary of the game as you saw it.
I guess a really useful pre-season training match, you know, getting minutes in people's legs. I think it showed that Celtic are well ahead in their pre-season preparations than we are. And they knocked it about really, really well for an hour, didn't they? I think, you know, the subs kind of just changed that impetus a little bit. But I think the players might be thinking it's better off doing beat tests and SDS tests than chasing Celtic around for 60 minutes.
Yeah. Mark, your thoughts? All right.
Yeah, I thought Celtic passed the ball at pace well. Can't hear a word he's saying.
No, he's doing a bit of the Norman Collier. Ian, let me ask you your thoughts on the game.
Can you hear? You're breaking up, Mark.
Yeah, Ian, go on, give me your thoughts on the game.
I thought the first half was a good run around for us because that's what we got. Celtic have got a Champions League game. I think it's next week. So they're a long way ahead of us. I like the look of Parkinson. I liked Baker seemed fit and seemed back to his best, touch wood. Jada Silva looked fit. Like you, I was more enthused with the last half hour when the kids come on. We had that one chance when O'Dowda should have found somebody with a cross and he didn't. Looking at as a game, I thought we looked a bit punchless up front and lacked creativity in midfield until Backinson came on.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, Dave, the starting lineup, it was a 4-4-2, straight 4-4-2, really, wasn't it? Yeah, what were your thoughts on that shape? Because a back four of Danny Simpson, Baker in the middle, even though he's left-sided, and then Atkinson on his natural left side, and Jada Silva, and no Dan Bentley. Maybe we'll ask questions about that later, but that wasn't a bad back four, was it, really, all things considered?
I think, you know, toss-up between Simpson and Viner, isn't it, at right back, and if Callas is still here, you know, when the window closes in the start of the season, then I'm sure it'll be Callas on the right side and then pick anyone from Baker or Atkinson to play alongside him. So, yeah, no, as pre-season teams, a bit of a mix and match, probably erred on the side of, you know, senior players to start the 60 minutes and then brought on perhaps the more younger element for the last 30. So, yeah, no. Yeah.
What was the midfield? I'm just trying to picture it because I didn't write it down in time.
Sam Pearson, Matty James, yeah. Andy King and Casey Palmer.
Yeah, I mean, I'll ask Mark. Are you with us now, Mark? Yeah, you're back in the room.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you fine. Mark, Casey Palmer, bit of a problem child in the eyes of many City fans as to what is his role, what are his strengths and what have you. I thought he ran around a lot in the first half, but he didn't really do enough for me. And as I said to the guys before we went live, I thought it was very much a typical game from us that we'd seen too much of last season. But what were your thoughts on that that midfield that started the game?
We couldn't seem to get near the ball. There wasn't any out ball at the time, and we rarely threatened. There weren't many forward passes, and it really took the introduction of the substitutes, especially Tyreek Backinson, and it completely changed. And City finished much the stronger side, which was great.
But, yeah, we come on to those second half changes in a minute. Yeah, but yeah. Ian, who
our starting strikers. That was Chris Martin, and who was the other one?
Andy Vyman.
I mean, Vyman hit the post, didn't he, in the first half? That was a good effort. The ball was half clear to him. That's what he put in. I mean, again, Vyman runs around a lot, but Chris Martin, I thought, was as inconspicuous as Harry Kane was for certain games for large parts in Euro 2020. You know, do you think Chris will be leading the line for us?
Well, as things stand at the moment, I think he, if I had to pick a starting 11 against Blackpool from what is currently at the club, I'd probably go Martin in Wales in a two. But then again, I'd play three at the back because I think that's where we've got some strength, and we need to get height and strength into the side because my No More Mamby Pamby campaign is kicked off on Twitter, and I'm going to keep it going. This season, we've got to be 100% better in both penalty areas, which is why I was glad to see Atkinson look like a footballer and Baker look strong. But up front, it looked toothless. And if I put him in Wales up front, I'd probably play Andy Vyman as an attacking midfield player in the same way that Dean Holden do it. The difference is I'd put two proper midfield players in there with him, not Callum O'Dowder and one proper midfield player.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Dave, no Dan Bentley. Somebody said it was his birthday. Well, actually, it was his birthday yesterday, and I don't think Pearson's the sort of guy to let a player have a bit of time off to celebrate a birthday. Max O'Leary, I think, is a good keeper. Should we read anything to Dan not featuring in the game at all with Wiles Richards coming on for the last 15 minutes? What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the fact that he was at training yesterday or in the training video yesterday.
He wasn't.
No, he was.
He was. All right, he was there.
Pulling off saves all over the place. I wouldn't read anything into it, but you know, I think the conspiracy theorists are now be saying, oh, well, he's the man being freed up to buy the centre forward we want. But yeah, I don't, until anyone tells me anything different, I don't see him being anything than at the club.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much, as we say, a training game, Dave. I thought that it was going to be two halves of 30 minutes and then a half hour with that change. We sort of did. No, well,
he said it was going to be a 90-minute game. Going to make the changes after 60, wasn't he? I think.
Is that right? I read that it seemed a bit of a structural change. Mark, what were your thoughts on the Red Leicester contingent, Simpson, King, and the other midfielder?
Well, unfortunately, because I only saw 10 minutes of the first half, I don't really think I got the chance to appreciate much of their play until I got it on my iPad app. So I don't think I could really make a judgment on them at this stage. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised that apparently Andy King grew up a City fan, which was news to me. He was born on holiday in Barnstaple. For that was quite an interesting fact, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, players that Nigel Pearson knows very well. I'm not sure about, I mean, Danny Simpson, 34, on right-sided fullback. I prefer somebody with a bit more pace, and hopefully Viner can make that his own. But I think James and King can do a good job in midfield for us, and we need some experience there because we just didn't compete at the end of last season. So
hopefully
we can change that.
Ian, Matty James and Andy King, are they, you probably know more than me, but are they two samey sort of players? I mean, they're not, are they, would you say they're particularly creative or just good at holding the line?
Well, James is a holding midfield player. And Andy King was always, when he was, and you've got, there's two Andy Kings. There was the one that was at Leicester, who I remember absolutely destroying us when we went up there and lost 2-0 under Derek McGuinness. And after the game, McGuinness said, "Leicester are everything we want to be, or I want us to be." And Andy King was playing then, and I think he might have scored. But he's more of an attacking player, or was. But there was some talk that he's been in play. He was playing because he's played about 30 games, I think it is, since 2018. Mm. He was more of a closing the game out, holding player, hang on to the ball guy.
Yeah. So, would you say he's our Chris Brunt of this season, which hopefully for him it'll end a bit better than it did for Chris? No.
No, I mean, Chris Brunt was pushing 36 when he came here. Mm. And when he was fit, I thought he was half decent. But that's a chance you take when you sign older players. And we've got Danny Simpson as well. I mean, Andy King's 32. I saw him the other day on some videos and he looked fit as a flea. So we'll just have to see. I mean, I think particularly if we go to Rotherham and get Smith, I'd love to get Matty Crooks as well, because we need that power and that strength in midfield, and the guy gets a few goals as well. So, but I think Andy King could be, if he's anything like he was at Leicester, he could be a decent signing. But I mean, you couldn't really tell on tonight's showing. So they're off to Leicester, up to Loughborough to
Loughborough.
Do all the conditioning.
Yeah.
Do all the conditioning, and then Callas and
Nash.
Naj is already going up to...
Oh, that's right, he's back, isn't he? Callas and Wells. Yeah.
Callas and Wells come back. And then off we go. We've got the other two friendlies that Robin's TV will probably screw up as well. and finish it up watching. Well, there's something on there. Like, if you're the first 500 to log in, you're fine. And I've done it before where I've logged in earlier than some people, and then people think they're logging 15 minutes before kickoff, and it packs up. So it's not the first time.
I'll be honest, Ian, it's the first time I've had login problems, but you'd think that they were test lines and everything like that, because I tuned in at 7:15. I mean, we're going off the track about the game, but it's very relevant because people have paid, as I've done, their 20 quid. And at 7:15, you have it built up that they're going to be interviewing Steve Lansdowne and various other people, and you're actually quite looking forward to it. And then I ended up spending, well, first 15 minutes of the game watching bloody Coronation Street, you know, having finally found it on Grandma Streaming, which was something that banned user put as a link up on the forum. I did manage to watch the rest of the game without sound, but it was a pretty poor show, and I hope that the club will make some announcement, because it wasn't just some of us, it was seemed to be the vast majority. And when people are saying watch it on a phone, you don't pay 10 quid to watch a game on a phone. And, you know, I haven't got an iPad yet, and I was trying to work it on the app, but I didn't know what my password was on the app, and it was a bloody disaster. But there we go. Dave, Jay De Silva, he's not featured again for a very long time because of injury. I noticed a few murmurings of, well, he's not all that in the time that he was on. I mean, he looked fit enough to me, but He's no Luke Shaw, is he? He doesn't seem to put any threatening balls into dangerous areas, and maybe tonight wasn't a good example to pick him up on. But your thoughts on Jay and holding down that left back spot?
I think, in fairness, if we're trying to judge people's careers at Bristol City on 60 minutes of the first pre-season friendly, then, you know, we're wasting our time, really.
I think,
you know, we have to wait and see what people are like when, you know, against Blackpool. For me, De Silva, when he's fit, he's one of our best players.
Mm.
He does need to improve his final ball into the box. He needs to pick someone out rather than it into an area. I guess there's a lot of people who might say Luke Shaw didn't offer a lot until perhaps some of those games for England in this tournament.
Yeah.
As well. So I think we just have to be mindful of, you know, jumping to too many conclusions from what we've seen tonight. I think let's just hope he has a injury-free season, or as injury-free as possible in the championship. But, you know, for me, he's our first choice left back.
Okay.
Pring and Nurse have got a lot to do to take his position. They might get minutes because of injuries or rest and rotation or whatever, but neither of them are at his level, in my opinion.
No.
Some chalk.
No, when you look at it like that, I mean, Ian, would you say that he's got that slot sort of nailed on unless he's injured or seriously showing a loss of form? Ian, Reader Silver?
It would look that way, I think, as far as Pearson, and he's the bloke who picks the team. As far as Pearson is concerned, I think he has. because he mentions people every now and again. He says how well they're doing, and you can normally think, oh, okay, well, that's him, Pitt, then. Personally, I think Campering offers something in physicality. I've watched him play for the under-23s. I mean, the guy has got a tremendous engine, gets up and down the line, good left foot, played left wing back for Pompey in a strong defence. So I think he's number two. And I think it's 6 foot two. He adds something defensively when the ball, it does come into our box in the air, because there's no doubt when you've got small fullbacks, you'll see clubs pinging the big diagonal over their head trying to catch him out. And De Silva had a real problem with that at one time. I think the only, I like Jay De Silva as a player, but I don't, I think the lack of height can be an issue. In a division where the ball, like it or not, it doesn't matter what kind of football we try and play within reason, unless we become Barcelona overnight, the ball is going to spend a reasonable amount of time in the air. And if that's in your penalty box, you're better off having a good 6 foot two than 5 foot six.
Yeah, that physicality, I mean, that's why I said, Dave, about Jay De Silva, because when they made those changes, we come on to those changes now in the second half with half an hour to go. Mark, who was playing the two central defenders? That was Taylor Moore and Cameron Pring, and it was somebody else at left back, wasn't it?
George Nurse.
And what caught my eye was that Pring had that physicality, and Nurse isn't small, but I totally agree with Dave that on paper that Jay De Silva is the specialist left back we've got. But as Ian rightly points out, height is a problem for him. I mean, Mark, no Riley Towler this evening, because is he got a slight injury at the moment?
Not that I'm aware of. I think the only injured player I'm aware of was Joe Williams. But I think Ian was right. I mean, splitting our centre backs and full back was a regular thing last season, especially down on our left flank. It was far too easy for Oak to open us up. Midfielders not dropping back inside, and a lot of our midfielders tend to be small, you know, left over from the Lee Johnson era. So all round, I think you find a much more, you know, physical team. And you only have to look at Tyreek. He's bulked up a bit. The commentators mentioned it, and he looked very good when he came on. Lots of forward passes.
He did.
And as a result, we were going one way at the end. I mean, it looked like that Celtic would wear us down, and they were just playing the ball around for fun without getting behind us. But at the end, we looked very strong.
Well, we were buzzing. We, I mean, Dave, I said at the top of the podcast, I thought the last half hour, I actually perked up a bit because I thought, this is okay. We played at a greater tempo, didn't we? Did you think that, Dave?
We did. And I think, you know, it's down to the fact that they'd run around for 60 minutes and suddenly they got 10 players coming on with fresh legs, and it made a difference. But we did play quite well.
But they looked confident, though, didn't they? Yeah, I mean, the back four, I mean, Zach was there at right back, and you could say, well, Celtic, you know, they're not all that. I mean, they'd probably be a good championship side, I would say, yeah? It's going to upset anybody north of the border who's listening. But Zach Viner, Taylor Moore, who I think suffered last season through being played on the left side, and then with Cameron Pring, and then with Nurse, you know, a very young back four, but didn't seem to be troubled that much. And then in the middle of the park, we had Masengo and Backinson there. It was Backinson who put that ball through that Saluka Jana got on the end of, and I think got that knock, which caused him to go off. Am I right there, Dave, with that?
Yeah.
Backinson?
No, I thought Backinson was probably the pick of the players, if you can, you know, just take that snippet of 28 minutes that he was on the pitch. He looked really, really bright, you know, his usual pass routine line. And I think it was made commentary on Robin's TV as well. He looks like he's a bit more solid as well than he was, you know.
Oh, that's what I thought. I think somebody said he looked ripped or something like that. But, you know, he looked really... But, and without naming names, or nobody was naming names, it was veiled criticism that some players weren't, by the manager himself, some players weren't buying into this level of physical conditioning, and it was sort of reading between the lines. Well, some people were thinking, you know, that maybe it was Backinson, but he looked a unit, didn't he?
Yeah, Yeah, very, very impressive tonight. And I think it's another option in there, isn't it? You know, you can see us being at a perm 3 out of 6 central midfielders quite nicely.
Well, we come on to perming combinations in midfield in a second. Ian, Masengo, no goals, no assists in 50 appearances at championship level. He's not a novice anymore. I thought he did okay. And then Callum O'Dowda was on the wing. I thought he, you know, I'm not his greatest fan, but a couple of touches that he showed, I thought he looked good. But what were your thoughts on that midfield for the last half an hour?
I think Backinson was probably the only midfield player we had who passed the ball forward regularly. Masengo, I'm ever so sorry, and I know I say this a lot, and people must get sick of it, but I don't know what he is. He covers a lot of ground. He works very hard. He's neat and tidy. He's never going to score a goal. He's never going to get you an assist. So you have to ask, and I'm coming to a similar conclusion about Casey Palmer.
Yeah.
I think he's working hard enough, but for a player of his ability and with some of the things I've seen him do, he really doesn't give you anything. He doesn't give you anything in terms of real physicality, supporting the attack. He can be creative, but he isn't a lot. But you're talking about permanent midfield players, and if you call O'Dowda and Vineland midfield players, we've got about 8 or 9.
Well, we have. Anybody.
And we've got 7 centre backs. If you call Zach Viner a centre back, you've got 7 centre backs, 3 lefties, 4 righties, and another player who's injured we didn't see tonight. The one I'm looking forward to seeing is Robbie Cundy.
Yeah, because he's another one. He's another one, you know, which if you think about it, and Riley Towler as well. Robbie Cundy, Riley Towler and Cameron Pring can all play that left side, or Pring then starts to challenge Jay De Silva for a place. I mean, Mark, what were your thoughts on that last half hour of the game where the tempo picked up? And I'm just trying to remember, it was up front, it was Janna and Tommy Conway. Who was on the right side of midfield? Because it was back in Cinema Sengo in the middle, O'Dowda left. Who was on the right side? And yeah, your thoughts on that last half hour? Mark. He's gone again. Never mind. Dave. Oh, you're there. There you go.
Go on then, Mark.
Speak, Mark.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
I don't know. I was on the right. I think Conway was up front. We just lacked a bit of physicality because we got in twice behind them. There was a lovely bit of play out of defence, and Nurse played the ball around the corner for O'Dowda, and we just failed to get a foot on it. I think Backinson hit it into the back of one of our players, and then right at the death, or Edwards got in behind again, and his cross was deflected behind for a corner, and I think that was the final whistle. But we showed genuine pace.
Yeah, that was a stunning run by Edwards. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we really frightened Celtic, who looked like they were going to win for most of that game. So, I was really pleased. The replacements played far better than the experienced players, I think.
Yeah. Interesting, Dave. Red Oxo's put on the text feed. We dumped 13, brought in 4, and still can field 2 teams without Callas, Naj and Bentley, etc. I expect them all to go for a fee. You know, that lot in today's market, Dave, if they did go, you'd probably get collectively for the 3, 15 million, would you say?
Which 3?
Callas, Naj and Bentley. You know, one of the top defenders in the World Cup, one of the best goalkeepers in the league, World Cup Euros.
No one's got any money, Dave.
No.
You know, you're going to pick up his wage bill as well. I think, you know, Bentley's our most saleable asset, in my opinion, because his probably wages aren't as big as Callas's either. Callas, you know, even in kind of like break-even terms, you've got to sell him for 4 million to break even on FFP. You know, I don't think you're going to get a lot more than that for him, even after a good championship. Naj, what are you going to get for him? 1.5-2 million at most?
Yeah, 2 mil. Yeah. You know,
on allegedly 16, 18 grand a week. Ain't going to happen, in my opinion. So, yeah, we'll see.
I think that's a problem. I think Kalas, you get more for him after his performance in the Euros than you would have got during at the end of last season. So, we'll, you know, if you looked at players that I thought were surplus to requirements, you'd probably say Naji and Palmer. But if you sold Naji and Palmer, they cost us 5.1 million, and I can't see us getting that.
We'd probably get half of that, Ian, to be fair, I think. Yeah,
I think we'd be lucky to get 1 million for Palmer. We might get 1 to 1.5 million for Naji.
Who's going to pick up Palmer at, you know,
his wages, 20 grand a week.
Over £1 million a year wages. It ain't going to happen, is it? That's the problem. That's why the transfer market's dead.
Why don't we let him go to Ipswich on loan for the season and pay half of his wages? Because that's one solution, isn't it? Yeah.
Or coach him and make him better and more useful for us.
Well, do you think you can make some? How old is Palmer next birthday? 24?
I think he's young, isn't he, still? I think with Palmer, when he came back from Swansea, he actually had 5 games where actually he contributed a lot. We had the Swansea win where he scored. I think he scored against Birmingham. And against Birmingham, he put on a really good, impressive shift that game as well. And then, having played 5 games on the bench, which is something that he rarely gets a chance to do, he then had 5 games off the bench. So he kind of lost all his momentum. And then he picked, I think he was carrying a bit of an injury for the latter half a dozen games as well. So I think everyone needs a bit of a fresh start. And I think we just need to wait and see how they actually perform in a City shirt in a league match.
I wish I shared your optimism there, because, you know, he's a nice guy by all accounts. Yeah, but
it's not optimism. I think it's just trying to read too much stuff into stuff that we don't really have a lot of insight.
No.
And also how judgeable is pre-season? You know, Baker ain't going to play right hand side centre back, is he, this season? Not more than a couple of times, you know.
But if Kalas goes,
but I don't think you sign 2 left-sided centre backs if you think Thomas Kalas is going to go either. And I think that's the difference. I think.
Yeah, I think if you've got the only clubs that could afford Kalas are a Premier Division club. I mean, discounting going abroad, a Premier Division club or a Championship club with parachute money.
Yeah,
and you might get somebody like Brighton if they sell Ben White to Arsenal for 50 million quid, which looks likely. Then they might say, "Well, we'll spend 15 million on Thomas Kalas because he'll do a job for us alongside Adam Webster, who he's already played with." So you might get that. I mean, that's probably clutching at straws, but you might get that. Bentley, there's loads of good goalkeepers available for nothing, like Premier loans and all the rest of it. So I'm not convinced on that. Adam Naji, after his performance for Hungary, you might get your money back, and that would give you enough to go in buy a striker.
Well, that's the key. That's why I'm saying this about who's going out the door, because as a number of people have pointed out on the text feed here, Pearson's made it clear that it's out before in. We are lightweight in the goal scoring department. We do need to get somebody. So we've probably got to raise between 3 and 5 million, I would say, yeah? And if it's not Bentley or Kalas, then we're going to be struggling to do it, I would also say. Anybody dispute that view?
Yeah, no, I don't think enough value, are they, to do that, apart from the 2 you mentioned.
And he's looking for a big, tall forward, a target man, if you like, or whether the media have said, haven't they? He hasn't come out.
He wants a striker to put the ball in the back of the net, Mark, and he said he wants people with pace and energy. So I think Smith, in that,
that's what I mean. I can't see what Michael Smith would bring for us. I mean, he ain't that mobile.
I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's what we need.
I think Jerry Yates had a better proposition, but he cost too much, wouldn't he? Or they want too much, Blackpool. They want $5 million. They ain't going to get that, are they?
No. But well, nobody's going to pay promotion.
Blackpool getting promoted, knock that on the head as an option, I think, because it's probably value tripled as a result in it. So,
yeah.
So who else is available?
Well that's it. To be honest, I'd have Smith. I'd have Smith because I think he'd be the Robbie Turner to Naki Wells of Bobby Taylor. That's what I think he'd add. And I think he'd also do what Turner did for us at the back. You know, because we've got to be better in both penalty areas. Absolutely got to, because otherwise it's just a waste of time. We might as well, you know, if we...
Well, you're right there about a forward helping out at a back, because that was the one thing that his performance didn't dip with Pham when he was here for the balance of the season. He was still good at heading the ball away, but I don't think we'll get any idea what the starting lineup's going to be until the Villa game on July the 31st. Would everybody sort of agree with that it is very experimental, and Pearson's making it clear that that's how he does view pre-season friendlies? Yeah, would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's exactly that, isn't it? You know, he was heard in the Robin's Uncut 8 yesterday saying, those of you who get 60 minutes, those of you who get 30 minutes, you'll be doing a training session tomorrow morning at Loughborough while the others rest, and then they'll be all in the afternoon, won't they? So very much, I guess, Rennie's playing a massive part in terms of the team side, and I guess, I know we've not talked about it yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if Joe Williams, you know, Pearson said he'll be back for the start of the season. It wouldn't surprise me if he's doing his own kind of bespoke regime to try and get fit. And maybe quite as, you know, intense as the first 2 weeks of pre-season would be for everyone else. It's like, slowly, catchy monkey, just get him up to
speed. It beggars a question. What the bloody hell was his injury? And how come, or did he pick up the injury with us, or was that somebody else that we signed that picked the injury up with us? Did he carry it over? Because, he's been out for a year, for Christ's sake.
His first injury, he got on the first day of training trying to kick a ball. And
right.
I think he did his thigh or his quad or something like that.
Yeah.
And then during rehabilitation for that, he came back and he played a couple of games. He played away at Sheffield United in the Cup, didn't he? And then during his rehab, he did his hamstring, which is why the leak story, his story, was in The Athletic about how players were worried about, in other words, he was, about the treatment he was getting at the club. And it was the whole Andy Rolls thing, and then it all comes to a head, and Andy Rolls is off to, you've got people all over forums calling him Dr. Death. I don't know if the bloke's any good or not, but I mean, last season, I mean, and Pearson says, well, you know, I don't want to mention it, and then he does. We weren't fit enough, and everybody was injured.
Yeah.
And I've never known injuries like that. Yeah, players get injured, okay, but not that, and not all those hamstrings. And players were out. You know, like Tinya made a point tonight on the commentary. He said, George Nurse and Cam Pring were recalled to play, but they both got injured. Now, in fairness, Nurse did do his hamstring, I think, at Walsall.
Yeah, at Walsall.
Cam Pring was 2 days into a fitness and conditioning regime set up by Andy Rolls, and he did his hamstring after he'd been playing, I'll say, 6 months. It wasn't quite that.
Yeah.
Pompey. I mean, come on, what's going on?
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, look, next game, they're off to Loughborough. Next game's next Tuesday, I think, isn't it? Lunchtime kickoff against MK Dons. And we've seen good pre-seasons witter away into nothing at the start of the season, and then indifferent pre-season campaigns, and then the team gets off to a flyer. We haven't discussed the fixtures yet. I don't want to go into detail on that, but it's not an easy start to the season. I mean, Mark, I mean, you look at the games, there's no easy games in this championship, but we were discussing it earlier today. Was it Blackpool home, Borough away, Swansea home, and then is it Reading and Cardiff away before the international break? That's the batch of five. If we get five or more points out of that, we'll have done well, won't we? Would you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a complete unknown. I mean, I looked at the championship odds before the game tonight, and I think odds check are down as finishing 18th. So that was very disheartening. But it's just a complete unknown with the way we finished last season, not winning any of our last 10 games. It's almost like it's a completely new start. We didn't really take anything from the end of last season that could fill us with any optimism. So we just got to hope. And based on what we'll be able to see in the next few weeks, we'll see if City can be competitive, physical, and we're able to, to last the pace, because all of those things were lacking at the end last season. What we want to see, first of all, is City be competitive in games and stop leaking City goals.
Well, being rolled over. No, you're right.
Exactly. That'll be a good start. Right. And it's imperative we win that first game, which is it's very winnable. So
that's the one of the five that, on paper, although newly promoted teams are difficult, that's the one of the five that you'd think, well, goodness, let's get off to a winning start. I mean, Dave, looking around the rest of the division, nobody's been out splashing the cash, have they? Or has any particular clubs have sort of surprised you by their stealth in the market at all? I haven't looked in detail, but I'm sure you have.
Usually, I think QPR have done some reasonable business. You know, they've got Charlie Austin back. They've just got the lad from Norwich at left back, Sam McCallum, on loan for the season. He was at Coventry last year. He was on my kind of shortlist of players I like. A couple of other bits and pieces I think they've done. So they look like they've probably improved themselves. There's a lot of fuss being made over Luton's recruitment, and that, they've brought in five or six players.
Lansbury.
Lansbury.
where's Dewsbury Hall this season? Because if we had a loan player, he's nowhere.
Brought in, say, Henry Lansbury, brought in Cameron Jerome, brought a lad from Scotland. I'm trying to think who else they've brought in. But for me, when you look at the players that have gone out, and they've lost James Collins, they've lost Dewsbury Hall, they've lost, who's the centre-back, Matty Pearson. I would say their first 11 looks weaker, and people are saying, "Oh, look at them! They're going to be pushing on towards playoffs from mid-table last year." And my view is they're one of the teams that suddenly realised that it's difficult to improve your squad quickly.
Yeah,
you can improve your squad, but it's difficult to improve your first team because they haven't got them. So not a lot. It'd be interesting. I think the clubs with the parachute money they'll be probably late movers in the transfer market because of the Euros, and also just the market conditions,
the way it goes. Yeah, when the squads get announced in the Premier League. I mean, Ian Pham, West Brom, 45 grand a week, as Dave pointed out today. That's his current 20, but then because he's a free, they could probably afford to pay Pham 45 grand a week, but I wonder how his pre-season's going, whether he's going to be in tip-top condition if they come in, because there's not been that many clubs beating a path to his door, have there?
Well, they can afford to pay him that because they get, before balls kick, they get £43 million more than we do. That's one reason. And last season, they got £100 million in TV money, whereas we got about seven. I'm talking about what you get from the solidarity payment and the television money. So that, to me, is something that absolutely has to be stopped, phased out, call it what you will, but we can't. It's just ridiculous because if you look at last season, two of the clubs that came down before went back up, and the other one got in the playoffs. I think it's going to get harder and harder and harder to break through that glass ceiling. We've lost 45 million quid the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's only because we sold all those players the year before and made 10 million profit that we're not in breach of in breach of FFP. So, I think if the way I look at it, if the season, if the season started and we've got all the players that are currently here and everyone was fit, I think we could put a reasonable side together in a 3-4-3 or That's 3 points. Yeah. If Joe Williams is fit, you've got him, you've got Matty James, and you've got Andy King. It's three very experienced midfield players. And you've also got Backinson, who's got to turn really from being a big kid into a
to a man. To a Patrick Vieira type. He's got the physique of doing that, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Every time. And he's got the skill and he's got the talent. Look at the goals he scored last season.
Yeah, no, he scored some crackers last season. I mean, one player that didn't feature tonight because he's self-isolating is Scott, isn't it? Yeah, because, I mean, I think...
I haven't heard that. Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah, no, that's why he wasn't around tonight, self-isolating. And I thought Benarous was mentioned in positive terms as though he might have been in the squad today as well. But I think the future looks it can't look any bleaker than it did 8 weeks ago, can it really? Guys, just to wrap up, Euro 2020 played in 21. I'll come to you first, Mark, because you've been sat there patiently in the background there. If you know, Gareth Southgate, you know, you look at his record, semi-final, losing finalists on penalties. It's a bit like Lee Johnson, really. If you look at the optics at high level, that's success. So how did you feel after the game on Sunday against Italy?
Upset, but you know, I was chuffed we got to the final. The right team won. The manner of defeat was awful. You've got to remember that Gareth Southgate got us to a Nation League, you know, third place in the Nation League as well a couple of years ago. And you know, in our group, we beat Spain away, didn't we? We beat Spain away in Croatia at home, so we had a good run then. So, I mean, he's done more in his short time, in his 5 years, than any England manager's done since Alf Ramsey. So we're going in the right direction. I think this side will peak. Maybe in the next tournament we should qualify for, and we've now got a glut of internationals coming up between now and November, playing Hungary twice, so we'll see Adam Nash very soon.
Yeah.
But I think it's good going forward. Shattered that we lost. My abiding memory though of wasn't just the penalty misses on Sunday, but what really peed me off was Chiellini's challenge on Bukayo Saka, yanking him by the flipping collar.
Oh, God, yeah.
Last time I saw a move like that, Jonah Lomu did it to Rory Underwood, I think, in the 95 World Cup semi-final, tossing him onto the side of the pitch. I mean, it was like a physical assault.
It was. And he did it. No, and if it had been, if it had been 30 yards further forward, it probably would have been a red.
Well, he did it because he knew he'd get booked. And I mean, if there isn't a reason for sin bins in football, that just typified it. You need sin bins. All this dark arts crap and taking one for the team, I'm fed up to the back teeth of it.
Yeah.
Bring sin bins in. Referee games properly. Football's too self-righteous about the way it penalises players. Just ridiculous challenges like that have got to be penalised.
Yeah. Ian, I said to you by text at the end of the game, bad game management by Gareth Southgate. His reason for the order of penalty taking was that every training session for the last 3 years they practice, and you know, it's based on the results of that. But you know, three kids under 23, Rashford's 23, and not kicking a ball in the game. I mean, it wasn't great, was it?
No, but I think anybody that says it was because of the penalties is really missing the point. It was a gigantic missed opportunity. We didn't do anything like enough in the last 60 minutes of normal time or in the 30 minutes of extra time. We just didn't. We were the second half. All we did was kick the ball away. It was like watching a giant game of attack and defence. We couldn't get on the ball. We couldn't dominate possession. We didn't put Italy's aging defenders under any real kind of pressure. And when you talk about strikers and if they're ineffective, all strikers need service. And I think Harry Kane showed that when he got service, when he got the crosses, he put the ball in the net.
Yeah.
I would say where I think Southgate got it wrong was in his substitutions. First substitution shouldn't have been Saka, it should have been Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one likely to do something to create a goal or to win a free kick or that. And we've got to find a way to start him all the time. You know, I can remember this, Dave, years ago, players like Alan Hudson and Tony Curry and Rodney Marsh and Glenn Hoddle. Oh, no, we don't want them in the team. Well, who are you going to put in the team instead then? Well, Peter Storey, he's a only midfield player for Arsenal because you've got to have a ball winner. Really? Wouldn't it better to have somebody that can do something when you've got the ball? So I think he made that mistake. He didn't get his, he got his substitutions wrong. And bringing Henderson on, I thought, was also a mistake. They should have been more positive and gone for it. And I would have rather lost 2-1 in normal time.
Than play the way we did. Yeah. Yeah.
Play the way we did and go out on penalties. Which
on penalties.
We've never been any good at penalties.
No, we haven't. We haven't. Dave, you said to me when we were chatting about the Euros, it rekindled your love for the national game or England and what have you. And if you'd have said at the start of the tournament, final, losing to Italy in 90 minutes, like Ian's just said, yeah, they were the best team in the tournament. You'd have thought, wow, yeah, there's no disgrace in that. It was just so near, yeah, so far, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure I went as far as, you know, rekindle my love. I'm not sure. So quote those words. I'll have my lawyers on to you tomorrow morning.
All right. Yeah.
No. In all seriousness, I was quite infused by watching an England team in a tournament again. I've been pretty critical of England's performances in tournaments and qualifying for a number of years. So much so that probably in the last 18 months, I've not bust a gut to watch an England game. You know, a bit like the Lightly Lads, you know, I'll go down a pub, and not that I've been able to go down a pub in COVID, but, you know, if an England game's been on and I've got something else to do, I might, you know, I might record it and watch the highlights. I mean, in the past, I'd have avoided all news about it, you know, and tried to watch it at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning so I don't get disrupted and all that. And I haven't done that for a while. And I thought what Southgate did was start to create what, you know, from the outside looks a bit like a club mentality at international level, where players, you know, I thought, you know, flexible in his systems, flexible in which players could come in and play systems, could, you know, come in and, you know, be a, you know, a player for that particular role against that particular team. Mm. And I thought we actually played with a plan and a purpose. Is it exciting end-to-end football? Nope. But did it get us to a final of a tournament? Bar the Scotland game, and then probably I'll call it the middle hour of the Italy game, I actually quite enjoyed watching.
Yeah, we're good to watch. It wasn't it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad for an England team.
We played down the sides. Yeah. That sometimes meant we play down the sides, we stop, we come back, we go back through the centre backs, we go down the other side. But I've spent, well, what was my first tournament? 78, when we weren't even at the World Cup. But from 82 onwards, all the World Cups and European Championships we've qualified in that period. Most tournaments I come away with the same thing, that, shit, we've chased other teams around the pitch, a bit like City did with Celtic tonight, and we can't get the ball. And then when we get it, we try one Hollywood pass, we give it back to them, we spend another 5 minutes chasing it. And I thought this tournament was the complete opposite of that. And that actually, we control possession. We tired other teams out. You know, Croatia first game, Croatia, not, you know, if you look at a comparison between 2018 semi-final and this game, where I know we scored early, but we didn't. We just couldn't get hold of the ball in that game.
No.
We controlled the game against Croatia. We didn't create many chances. But I much prefer watching that than normally swearing at the telly in frustration that we can't even get hold of the ball. Albeit that middle hour against Italy was kind of a bit back to the, you know, the old England, but
yeah,
I think there was a very good team, and I thought we ended. I thought the last 10 minutes of full time, of normal time, sorry, after he'd made a couple of subs, I thought we finished the 90 quite strong, and I thought we were the better side in extra time without really creating a lot as well, and that's really where. You know, people are saying sack Southgate or whatever. I think that's
ridiculous.
And I agree with Ian as well. I think the subs probably weren't dynamic enough. Instead of waiting for the equaliser and then having to respond, why not try and respond to stop the equaliser? And that might be by going a bit more attacking. It might have been by bringing another defender on. Who knows? But I think he missed a trick there. But that's the only thing to be critical
opportunity lost, I would say, in the overall scheme of things.
He made a brave decision against Germany, didn't he, to swap to a back three, but people seem to forget that. So, you know, can't have your cake and eat it with him. I think he's had a pretty good tournament.
Rice going off was a
big loss.
Yeah, he had a knock, didn't he? Guys, look, we're just coming up for the hour. We'll probably do another one pre-season, maybe after the Villa game, or if not after the Villa game, in the week leading up to the first fixture. I haven't decided what we're going to do on match days yet, because most of us will be travelling back. I know you have a long way to travel after home games, and I don't know if we're going to be able to watch away games on Robin's TV or streams or something like that. But, you know, we'll certainly be repeating the level of coverage we did last season. And anybody who's still listening, really great that there's been a total of 63 listeners on, if not for a whole of it. Great that you've all come back to listen to us tonight. Guys, are we feeling our expectations? I'll ask each of you in turn. Prediction, not points, prediction for position in the table that you would view as satisfactory. Ian, you first. Just a number. Which position?
As satisfactory, I'd be happy not to have a relegation struggle and win some home games. So, I don't know, 12th?
12th. Ian? Mark?
I'm Ian.
I was going to say 12 as well. Yeah, 12.
And Dave?
Yeah, I think echo what Ian just said there. No relegation battle, and as I say, get some semblance of home form, I think is...
I think that would make a difference to the fans, that if we were attractive at home and hard to beat away, you know, we haven't had decent home form for very many years. If you go back on the days of Danny Wilson and before that, we used to win a lot at home. You know, we'd be winning between 12 and 14 games. I can't remember
Dave, Dave, you don't have to go back that far. About Steve Cottrell.
I'm talking about a champion.
Before we close out on the England thing, can I just say that I think it's going to be a real shame that UEFA and FIFA, after everything that happened at Wembley, will not allow us to host a World Cup or a Euros in the near future. I mean, they've already said that this play in five different countries thing is never going to happen again because it was a bit of a disaster. But they said it was unfair. I don't think we'll be allowed to host, but because they're on about going for the World Cup in 2030, aren't they, or something like that. I can't see them letting us do it. And I think one of the fines is coming because we've got, I think it's up to 8 charges now, if not 9, from UEFA. And I think Wembley will be operating under a reduced capacity. I don't think you'll see 60, I think you might see 40,000 in there.
Ian, look, we ain't ever going to win the bloody Eurovision Song Contest, so not getting any form of major competition in our lifetimes, is we're going to have to expect it. I like a little comment somebody's put on here. This isn't eBay, but somebody said, anybody want to buy Lando Norris's watch? Perhaps not, but there we go. Everybody, thanks for listening.
David, and you remember Boom Bang A Bang, didn't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do remember that. Dave, Ian, Mark, thanks for your contribution as always. And we'll speak. Dave. And thanks for everybody for listening. Speak to you all again soon. All the best. Cheers,
everybody. Bye. Everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I thought we agreed cutting down. Yeah, what are you watching? Charlie.